kayo'y nakikinig sa SBS Filipino. Pakinggan niyo pa ang kwento sa sbs.com.au/filipino.
SBS, a world of difference. You're with SBS Filipino on mobile, online, and on radio.
Kayo'y nakikinig sa SBS Filipino sa mobile, online, at radio.
Nais naming kilalanin ang tradisyonal na nagmamay-ari ng lupain mula saan kami sumasaing papawid sa araw na ito. Ang SBS Filipino ay nagbibigay galang sa mamamayan ng Wurundjeri, Woi Wurrung ng Kulin Nation at sa mga nakakatandang miyembro ng kanilang komunidad noon at ngayon. Kinikilala din namin ang mga tradisyonal na nagmamay-ari ng mga lupain ng Aboriginal at Torres Strait Islander mula sa mga lugar na kinatatayuan ng aming mga tagapakinig.
It's interesting speaking to them. They're not overly dramatic about the situation. They're very, you know, we're going to make it work. We have to survive. We have to remain positive. But then the more time you spend with them, the more you see the impact that it's having on the whole community. Yeah.
Ang komunidad na nasa gitna't nasasaksihan at nararanasan ang bawat epekto ng alitang pangteritoryo. Yan at marami pang iba sa programa ngayong Biyernes ng umaga. Para sa pinakahuling balita mula SBS Filipino, narito si Martin Duanyo.
Sa detalye ng mga balita, ngayong Biyernes, 13 ng Marso taong 2026, rights groups kinondena ang panukalang visa travel ban ng pamahalaan ng Australia. Qantas nagbabala sa posibleng pagtaas ng pamasahe dahil sa mahal na jet fuel. At Commission on Filipinos Overseas nagbabala sa mga Pilipinong nagbabalak mag-aral sa Australia at nag-aasam ng Australian Dream. Para sa mga detalye, hinimok ni Foreign Minister Penny Wong ang mga Australian citizen na nakatira sa Middle East na sumakay sa mga commercial flight at bumalik sa Australia. Dumating sa Sydney at Melbourne noong Huwebes ng umaga ang dalawang flight mula United Arab Emirates at lumapag din sa Melbourne ang ikatlong eroplano mula Qatar. Sakay ng tatlong flight ang mahigit 400 Australiano, kaya umabot na sa 3,639 ang kabuuang bilang ng mga nakabalik sa bansa mula noong ika-4 ng Marso. Sinabi ni Wong na karamihan sa mga Australianong naipit o nasa biyahe noon ay nakauwi na. Hinimok din niya ang mga natitira pa sa Middle East na bumalik na sa Australia bago maging huli ang lahat.
There are regular, although limited, commercial flights available. It is always possible if the conflict continues to escalate that they become no longer available.
Samantala, inatasan ng federal na pamahalaan ng mga hindi-essential Australian officials na nasa Israel at United Arab Emirates na umuwi na sa Australia. Sa isang pahayag sa social media kagabi, kinumpirma ni Foreign Minister Penny Wong na mananatili ang mga essential officials upang tulungan ang mga Australianong kasalukuyang nasa UAE. Muling pinaalalahanan ng Department of Foreign Affairs and Trade ang mga Australiano na huwag bumiyahe papunta ang Israel at UAE. Hinimok din muli ang mga Australianong nasa Middle East na umalis kung ligtas itong gawin. Sa ibang balita, kinondena ng mga rights group ang bagong panukalang batas ng pamahalaan na pansamantalang magbabawal sa mga tao mula sa ilang bansa na bumiyahe papuntang Australia gamit ang ilang uri ng visa. Sa ilalim ng panukala, bibigyan ng bagong kapangyarihan ng Home Affairs Minister na magpatupad ng entry ban na hanggang 6 na buwan para sa mga taong mula sa mga italagang bansa na papasok sa Australia gamit ang temporary visa. Nagpahayag ng pag-aalala ang pamahalaan at ang koalisyon na maaaring magdulot ang sigalot sa Middle East ng pagdami ng mga taong hinihingi ang asylum pagdating sa Australia. Sa pahayag ng Asylum Seekers Resource Center, Ikinilala nila na maaaring hadlangan ng panukalang pagbabago ang mga taong tumatakas sa digmaan na makahanap ng ligtas na lugar at maaaring pigilan ang mga nasa panganib na makapasok sa Australia ng matagal o walang katiyakan. Sa karagdagang balita, nagbabala ang Qantas na tataas ang pamasahe sa eroplano ngayong Linggo dahil sa pagtaas ng gastos, lalo na sa presyo ng jet fuel na naaapektuhan ng digmaan sa Middle East, sa pahayag ng airline. Sinabi nitong mataas ang demand para sa international flights, lalo na papuntang Europe, kaya mas mabilis maubos ang mga smurang pamasahe. Dagdag nito, mag-iiba ang taas ng presyo depende sa ruta, at hinikayat ang mga customer na mag-book agad para makuha ang mas murang deal, sinabi ni Cirium Aviation Analyst Ellis Taylor sa SBS On The Money na maaaring tumaas ng hanggang 30% ang pamasahe sa eroplano ngayong taon.
For anybody who's looking to travel in that second half of the year, I'd be jumping on the fares now because they're unlikely to get cheaper.
Nanawagan ng mga indigenous advocate at ilang politiko na ilista ang buffalo grass bilang weed na may pambansang kahalagahan upang mapag-aralan ng mga paraan kung paano ito makokontrol. Iniulat ng Australian Native Species Council na nasakop na ng invasive na damong ito ang 26% ng kalupaan ng bansa at maaaring umabot sa 70% kung hindi mapipigilan. Sinabi ni Native Species Council Ambassador at Wiradjuri na si Richard Swain na hindi ito dapat protektahan.
It's a weed that is a boom for the cattle industry and a bust for country. It's a bust for tourism, health, firefighting. But these people here need to have their voice and speak for their country because this is happening and been happening for a long time.
Balita naman tayo sa Pilipinas. Hinimok ng CFO o Commission on Filipinos Overseas ang mga Pilipino na manatiling may sapat na kaalaman at magtakda ng makatotohanang inaasahan kapag nagpaplanong mag-aral sa Australia. Sinabi ng CFO sa isang payag na ang paglipat sa ibang bansa ng hindi handa ay maaaring maging isang mabigat na pagsubok sa pinansyal at emosyonal na aspeto para sa mga migranteng kulang sa impormasyon na nagahabol sa tinatawag na Australian Dream. Ipinaliwanag ni social worker Jeffy Sona mula sa Australian Filipino Community Services na ang mga matrikula sa mataas na edukasyon sa Australia ay karaniwang nasa 30,000 hanggang 50,000 AUD o 1.25 million pesos hanggang 2 million pesos. Hindi pa kasama dito ang ibang gastusin tulad ng renta, pagkain at transportasyon. Binigyan din niya ang mga programang pang-akademiko ay hindi karandisadong daan tungo sa permanent residency o citizenship. Pinayuhan ng CFO ang mga Pilipino na suriin ang kanilang mga migration pathway at unawain ang tunay na kalagayan ng mga lipunang balak nilang puntahan. Hindi lamang umasa sa mga pangako mula sa migration agent. Kabilang sa mga programa ng CFO para sa mga aalis na Pilipino ang pre-departure Orientation Seminar o PDOS at Peer Counseling Program o PCP na naghahanda sa mga migrante tungkol sa mga regulasyon, proseso, pagkakaibang kultural at iba pang mga bagay na maaari nilang maranasan sa ibang bansa. Sa lagay ng panahon ngayong Biyernes, posibleng makaranas ng malakas na ulan ng Darwin sa temperaturang 30 degrees Celsius, magiging maulan sa mga sumusunod. Newcastle at 23, Brisbane at 31, Cairns sa temperaturang 30 degrees Celsius. Posibleng umulan sa mga sumusunod, Melbourne at 20, Hobart at 19, Sydney at 23, bahagyang maulap sa Perth at 33, gayon din sa Canberra at 24, pati na rin sa Wollongong at 21, habang maaraw sa Adelaide sa temperaturang 25 degrees Celsius. Para sa iba pang balita, bisitahin ng www.sbs.com.au/filipino at ang SBS Filipino Facebook at Instagram pages. Martin Tuanyo, SBS Filipino. Abangan ninyo kalawang bahagi ng programa kasama si Maridel Martinez. Magandang umaga.
Magandang umaga sa lahat na nakikinig sa SBS Filipino ngayong 13 ng Marso. Biyernes, naku, Friday the 13th. Kasama niyo kami ni Martin Tuanyo, Maridel Martinez hanggang alas 11 ngayong umaga. Magandang umaga, Martin, at salamat sa paghatid ng balita.
Magandang umaga, Maridel, at magandang umaga po sa lahat na nakikinig sa atin ngayong Biyernes dito sa SBS Filipino.
Yan, naku, ngayon ko lang na-realize, no, Friday the 13th pala ngayon.
Mm-hmm. At kalagitnaan, halos kalagitnaan na ng Marso.
Para sa mga kababayan sa Pilipinas, naku, quinsenas na naman. Sweldo.
Sweldo ngayong araw dahil natapat ang quinsenas linggo.
So parang swerte para sa marami ang araw na ito. At syempre, Martin, naihatid mo ngayong umaga yung balita para sa mga international students, no? Parang lumaki ang bayad sa visa?
Ang ulat natin, Maridel, ay yun nga, dapat pagplanuhan. Ang pagplanuhan ang kung gusto ni ko nais nilang mag-aral. Dahil dito mga nakaraang linggo, lumaki ang bayad sa graduate visa. Dumoble kung hindi ako nagkakamali. Nanaulat to ni TJ Korea. Pero ngayon, meron tayong balita sa Pilipinas kung saan sinabi ng CFO na dapat paplanuhin kung mag-aaral sila sa Australia dahil hindi lahat ng pang-academic kong pathway ay migration daw or pathway to PR or citizenship.
O, kasi marami na pumunta dito, nag-aaral para magbakasakali na may pagpatuloy ang pamumuhay nila dito sa Australia. So isa talaga sa mga mahalagang bagay-bagay ay yung alam mo yung papasukan mo.
Mm-hmm. At dapat ay bukod sa maalam ka, may research ka, dapat may mapapagkatiwalaan ang karing migration agent or migration agency na yun naman ang nire-recommenda ng ating ulat sa Pilipinas.
Kasi bago ka makaalis, masusi rin, di ba, yung mga pagsusuri para makakuha ka ng visa, para makakuha ka ng admission sa paaralan. At syempre, dahil online lahat, parang kailangan mo siguruduhin na lihiti mo yung ini-enrollan mong paaralan as well. Kasi marami rin tayong nakapanayam na pagdating nila dito ay nag-aaral sila tapos biglang nawala yung paaralan, hindi ba?
Ang tinatawag dun ay parang ghost school. Di ba na parang nawawala nga kaya mahalaga na meron kang pagsasaliksik dahil bago ka makapag-apply ng visa ay kailangan mo muna mag-enroll dahil kailangan mo ng certificate of employment upon submission ng iyong visa application. Kaya yun talaga mauuna sa paghahanap ng maayos na eskwelahan.
So, yung certificate of enrollment.
Certificate of enrollment.
Trabaho na ang iniisip mo, Martin Tonyo. Pero yun nga, no, mahalaga yun at mahalaga na suriin mo, na lihiti mo na yung certificate na yun.
Mm-mm, mahalaga. At dahil meron naman tayong mga, meron namang website din sa Australian Immigration na nakalagay kung ano yung mga legitimate at meron mga certificate na mga college or universities dito sa Australia. Madaling hanapin, no?
Kasi marami ang nag-iisip, Australia, masarap ang buhay doon. Pero mahirap din, hindi ba, sa panayam mo sa kwaderno?
Hindi naman lahat talaga ay talagang up and down ang kanilang pathway dito at hindi porket nandito ka na syempre hayahayam po siguro para sa ilan pero ang realidad ay in terms of pagbabayad yun nabanggit natin kanina, renta, pagkain, transportation, ibang mga gastusin sa pang-araw-araw.
At syempre yung tuition at yung tinatawag na show money para may pagpatuloy mo yung paninirahan mo dito. Kasi pag nag-expire na, magre-renew ka uli. Yes. Kung yung nagkakamali, kailangan mo rin magpakita ng angkop na halaga para mapatunayan mo na kaya mong mabuhay habang naninirahan ka dito.
Oo, tama. Yun ang show money ay kailan lang ba dapat kundi ako nagkakamali 2024 o July 2024. Doon ang nagkaroon na ng show money at kailangan din mapakita mo sa show money mo na kaya mo tustusan yung buong duration ng iyong kurso. Kung sasabihin mo 60,000 ang iyong kurso, sa nabanggit natin kanina, 30 to 50,000 ang kurso ng mga higher education. So, dapat meron kang ganong amount. Plus, yun pa yung dapat mo yung gastusin mo pa sa pang-araw-araw.
So, kumbaga, kung yung buong kurso mo ay 60,000, kailangan may buffer ka na 40 para masabing mabubuhay ako habang nandito ako kahit wala akong trabaho.
Sana ganun, no? Yun naman ang recommended sa atin ng mga migration agent na nakakapanayam din natin dito sa SBS Filipino, no? Na sinasabi nila dapat may extra palaging halaga sa iyong ipapakitang show money.
Ayan. So, para sa mga karagdagang impormasyon, no, Martin, saan nga tayo magtutungo? Kasi may serye tayong kwaderno sa SBS Filipino.
Yes, tama ka dyan, Maridel. Maaari niyong bisitahin ang kwaderno sa SBS Filipino website kung saan yan ay isang gabay para sa mga international students na nandito na sa Australia o kahit mga nagbabalak pa lang dito sa Australia. Nandyan din naman yung trabaho visa at iba pa ni TJ Korea kung saan mapapag-usapan din yung iba't ibang visa applications.
Yan. So, kung may kakilala sila na nasa Pilipinas pa o kakilala sila nandito na gustong palawakin yung mga opsyon, yung dalawang serye na yan sa sbs.com.au/Filipino. At pahinga ka bukas?
Pahinga tayo bukas, pero magbabalik tayo sa Linggo, Maridel.
At sino naman ang ating aasahan, Martin?
Sa Linggo naman ay makakausap natin ang isang Pinay na kung saan siya ay ang nag-host ng AFC, Asian Cup, sa Perth, na dinaluhan ng 45,000 Filipinos.
Wow.
At isa siya sa mga talagang nag-host din sa Filipino community sa Perth. Malalaman natin ang kanyang storya. At saktong-sakto dahil March 15 yung quarterfinals game ng Pilipinas. At ito rin ay halos celebration din sa International Women's Month.
Ayan. At syempre, sa Linggo, naku, hindi mawawalang kasama natin si Annalyn Villata sa laro ng Pilipinas. Isa yan sa mga, naku, kundi ako nagkakamali, siguro nandun yan sa sideline. At
si Annalyn at si Edinel.
Si Edinel. Mantibay. Pero ihatid sa atin ni Annalyn yung mga natatanging kwento mula sa araw na yan. Maraming salamat, Martin Tuanyo.
Maraming salamat, Maridel.
At syempre, huwag po kayong aalis kasi pagkatapos nito, ihatid naman sa atin ni Shirley Escalante kung anong mga kaganapan sa Pilipinas, lalo na't naku, nagtataasa na ang presyo ng langis. Narito muna ang ilang mahalagang paalala. Pagbabalik ng SBS Filipino, hatid sa atin ni Shirley Escalante ang mga kaganapan sa Pilipinas, partikular ang mga isinasagawang hakbang kaugnay ng patuloy na pagtaas ng presyo ng langis at ang nakaraang pagbisita ni Pangulong Bongbong Marcos sa Estados Unidos.
Bago ipatupad ang malakihang pagtaas presyo sa mga produktong petrolyo, parang pila sa isang blockbuster movie ang linya sa mga gasolinahan sa Pilipinas. Halos mag-panic buying ng petrolyo ang mga motorista, kasama ang mga magsasaka at mangingisda na gumagamit din ng petrolyo sa kanilang kabuhayan. May ilang gasolinahan na mabilis na naubusan ang supply ng diesel na nagtala ng mataas na price increase at ginagamit ng karamihan ng mga pampublikong sasakyan. Umaabot na sa mahigit 60 piso kada litro ang presyo ng gasolina habang mahigit 70 piso at umaabot pa sa 80 piso kada litro ang presyo ng diesel. Sa isang gasolinahan sa La Trinidad Benguet, umaabot na sa halos 100 piso ang kada litro ng diesel. Sinasabi ng mga kumpanya ng langis, tataas pa ito. May ilang gasolinahan naman sa Quezon City ang nag-ulat na halos wala nang dumarating na supply sa kanila ng diesel. Kaya nangangamba silang posibleng magsara muna kung wala pa ring supply na dumating. Umaaray na ang mga tsuper kahit pautay-utay ang taas presyo sa langis. Pero tiniyak ni Pangulong Ferdinand Marcos Jr. na may sapat na supply ng krudo ang Pilipinas sa kabila ng krisis na nararanasan bunsod ng nagpapatuloy na giyera sa Middle East. Hindi rin umano dumadaan sa Strait of Hormuz ang krudo na kinukuha ng Pilipinas.
In terms of supply, we are in good shape. Not only do we have inventory in the Philippines, we also are awaiting some supplies coming in that are in transit. Ang pinaaral ko lang kung yung mga in transit, baka naman nandun sila sa lugar ng peligro para maging accurate yung kalkulasyon natin. Pero hindi naman daw. Yung pagsara ng Strait of Hormuz, hindi kasama dun sa kalkulasyon so far.
Sinertipikahan ang urgent ni Pangulong Marcos ang panukala na bigyan siya ng Kongreso ng emergency powers para suspindihin o bawasan ang excise tax na sinisingil sa mga inaangkat na produktong petrolyo, hakbang para pababain o kontrolin ang pagsirit ng lokal na presyo ng langis.
Actually, I will declare it as urgent because there's no point declaring it as urgent before the committee report has been completed. What we asked of the legislature is really very simple, is that when the price of oil, at least this is the original version, when the price of oil has breached $80 per barrel for on average for a month, the emergency powers can be exercised. Does that mean that you will necessarily do it, but it can be exercised by the President.
Yan ang tinig ni Pangulong Ferdinand Marcos Jr. Ilang araw matapos naman ang big-time oil price hike, aabot sa 139,000 tricycle drivers sa Metro Manila ang makatatanggap ng 5,000 peso financial assistance mula sa Department of Social Welfare and Development o DSWD. Tiniyak ng DSWD, kasunod ng pamamahagi ng ayuda sa mga tricycle drivers, isusunod agad ang pagbibigay ng tulong sa mga driver ng jeepney, buses, taxi at transport network vehicle service. At hindi lamang mahihirap ang makatatanggap ng ayuda sa gitna ng giyera sa gitnang silangan. Sinabi ni Metro Manila Council President at San Juan City Mayor Francis Zamora na kung may fuel subsidy para sa mga tsuper sa public transportation, bibigyan din ng tulong sa pambili ng bigas ang mga nasa pribadong sektor kasama ang middle class na apektado ng sitwasyon. Ayon kay Manila Mayor Isko Moreno, ang pondo ay kukunin sa Financial Assistance for Local Government Units. Kasunod ng pagbibigay ng ayuda at ang malakihang oil price hike, hindi na rin mapigilan ang pagtaas ng presyo ng mga produkto at serbisyo. Tsak umanong magkakaroon ng taas pasahe ayon sa Department of Transportation. Sinabi rin ng Meralco na nagdi-distribute ng kuryente sa Metro Manila at mga karating lalawigan na magtataas sila ng singil sa Abril. Ayon naman sa Department of Agriculture, tumataas na ang presyo ng ilang pagkain kabilang ang presyo ng bigas, isdang galunggong na umaabot na sa 340 pesos ang kada kilo mula sa 260 pesos hanggang 280 pesos kada kilo. May bahagyaring pagtaas sa presyo ng karneng baboy, patatas at bagyo beans. Maglalabas naman ang Department of Agriculture ng fuel subsidy para sa mga magsasaka at mangingisda sa susunod na dalawang linggo. Sila ang mga may-ari o nagrerenta ng mga makinarya at bangka. Bukod sa pagtutok sa sitwasyon sa loob ng bansa, nakatutok din ang gobyerno sa kalagayan ng mga Filipinos overseas, partikular ang mga overseas Filipino workers sa OFW sa gitnang silangan. Batay sa ulat ng Department of Migrant Workers o DMW, patuloy ang paghahanap sa nawawalang tripulanteng Pilipino na sakay ng tugboat na inatake sa Strait of Hormuz. 38 Pilipino naman ang kumpirmadong sakay ng dalawang barkong apektado ng mga pag-atake ng Iran sa Persian Gulf noong Miyerkules ng gabi, pero ligtas umano silang lahat. Ayon kay Migrant Workers Secretary Hans Leo Kakdak, 21 Filipino seafarers ang sakay ng isang tinamaang barko habang 17 ang sakay ng isa pang barko. Samantala, sa nakalipas na mga araw, nasa 110 OFW ang dumating sa Pilipinas mula sa Israel, Qatar at United Arab Emirates. Ayon kay Secretary Kakdak, 300 OFW ang target na maisama sa chartered flight pauwi sa Pilipinas. Umalis ang kalihim kagabi para personal na sunduin ang unang batch ng mga OFW na sakay ng chartered flight na inaasahan namang darating sa Pilipinas sa weekend. Sa ibang balita, tiniyak ni Pangulong Ferdinand Marcos Jr. na nananatiling matatag ang Pilipinas sa pagtataguyod ng rule of law at sa karapatang pantao na pundasyon ng pangmatagalang kapayapaan, seguridad at kaunlaran sa mundo. Ginawa ng Pangulo ang pahayag sa kanyang talumpati sa United Nations sa UN General Assembly na ginanap sa UN Headquarters sa New York City sa Amerika. Binigyang diin ni Pangulong Marcos na ang pag-anib ng Pilipinas sa United Nations, 80 taon na ang nakalilipas, ay nakabatay sa paniniwalang ang rule of law ang gabay sa mga pandaigdigang ugnayan. Binigyang diin ang Pangulo na sinusunod ng Pilipinas ang multilateralism, ang United Nations Charter at ang United Nations Convention on the Law of the Sea. Nanawagan din si Pangulong Marcos para sa kapayapaan sa gitnang silangan at sa iba pang lugar na may sigalot. Handa rin anya ang Pilipinas na gampanan ang non-permanent seat sa United Nations Security Council sa kampanya ng bansa na gampanan ang mandatong ito sa UN. Ayon sa Pangulo, kung ang matagal ng relasyon ng Pilipinas at UN ang pagbabasehan, maganda ang tsansa na makuha ng Pilipinas ang non-permanent seat para sa taong 2027 hanggang 2028.
The Philippines stands ready once again to contribute, to help calm voices of division, provide a voice of balance, to shun ambition for service, and always as a voice for principled peace. I stand before you to humbly petition for your support for the Philippines.
Yan ang tinig ni Pangulong Ferdinand Marcos Jr. 2/3 na boto ng 193 UN members ang kailangan ng Pilipinas para maging non-permanent member ng UN Security Council. Sa June 3 ang magiging botohan para riyan. Kabilang din sa ginawa ni Pangulong Marcos sa United States ay ang pakikipagpulong kay US Undersecretary of War for Policy Elbridge Colby. Tinalakay nila ang pagpapalaka sa depensa ng Pilipinas at Amerika at ang pagpapahusay ng interoperability ng sandatahang lakas ng Pilipinas at U.S. military sa pamamagitan ng balikatan exercises na magsisimula sa Abril. Sumentro rin ang pulong sa mga paraan para mapigilan ang mga aksyon na maaaring humantong sa giyera sa Indo-Pacific region. Pinagtibay ni na Pangulong Marcos at Undersecretary Colby ang commitment sa Mutual Defense Treaty at ang patuloy na pagtutulungan para sa isang matatag at matibay na Indo-Pacific region. Sa ugnayan naman ng Pilipinas at Australia, sa International Women's Month ngayong Marso, nagtutulungan ang gobyerno ng Australia at ang mga babaeng leader sa Pilipinas para isulong ang economic equality o ang pagkakapantay-pantay ng mga oportunidad para sa mga lalaki at babae sa paghahanap ng trabaho. Target nilang isulong ang women leadership sa technology at technology-enabled sectors at ang pagkakaroon ng inclusive workplaces sa Pilipinas. Itinulak din ang gender equality sa pulong ni na Department of Economy, Planning at Development Secretary Arsenio Balisacan at ni Australian Ambassador to Manila Mark Innes Brown. Tinukoy sa pulong ang paglikha ng dekalidad ng mga trabaho para sa mga Filipina at ang mga benepisyo ng pagkakapantay-pantay ng oportunidad para sa mga babae at lalaki. Samantala, nagbigay ng pagsasanay ang Australian Border Force sa Sydney sa mga opisyal at tauhan ng Philippine Coast Guard. Kabilang sa mga itinuro ay ang ligtas, legal at epektibong pagsasagawa ng vessel search sa dagat laban sa transnational crime at para harapin ang mga civil maritime challenges. Ayon sa Australian Ambassador, layo nitong panatilihing payapa at maunlad ang Asia-Pacific region. Mula sa Pilipinas, para sa SBS Filipino, Ako si Shirley Escalante.
Maraming salamat, Shirley Escalante. sbs.com.au/Filipino ang ating face, ang ating website page, SBS Filipino ang ating Facebook at Instagram page. At kung meron kayong mga smartphone, i-download na ang SBS Audio app. Libre ito at para mapakinggan nyo kami, saan man kayo, anumang oras, anuman ang inyong ginagawa. Kung di kaya may Spotify app naman kayo, naku, mag-create na ng SBS Filipino playlist para mapakinggan ninyo ang mga samot-saring mga balita, panayam at kwento na naaayon sa inyong interes, anumang oras, anumang araw, anuman ang inyong ginagawa, saan man kayo. Dito sa Australia. Maridel Martinez ang iyong kasama hanggang alas 11 ngayong umaga. Pakinggan muna natin ang ilang mahalagang paalala. Susunod sa SBS Filipino, SBS Examines, hatid ni Martin Tuanyo sa una sa dalawang bahagi tungkol sa mga usapin ng social cohesion. Paano nga ba naaabot ang pagkakaisa sa isang komunidad at partikular sa multikultural na komunidad? Sa bagong podcast episode ng SBS Examines, alamin kung paano umabot ang bansa sa gantong sitwasyon at kung paano muling mabubuo ang pagkakaisa.
Maraming nangyayari ngayon sa Australia.
Bondi Beach has now been declared officially a terrorist incident.
Terrified beachgoers run for their lives.
There's been a spike in Islamophobic abuse directed at Muslims from all walks of life.
Who they claim threw a homemade bomb into a crowd at a Perth Invasion Day rally.
Bumaba sa mas mababa pa sa 50% ang pakiramdam ng mga tao na sila ay kabilang sa bansa. Nahaharap ang bansa sa lumalalang pagkakahati-hati ng opinyon sa iba't ibang isyu. Nakipagtulungan ng SBS Examine sa SBS Insight upang tanungin ang ilang Australiano, paano tayo makakahanap ng paraan tungo sa isang mas nagkakaisa at mas inklusibong bansa? Sa dalawang bahaging podcast na ito, pag-uusapan natin kung ano ang sinasabi ng mga thought leader at bosses mula sa iba't ibang komunidad. Unang tanong, paano tayo umabot sa ganitong sitwasyon?
I think that in the past 2.5 years, Australian Jewish people have realized that the amazing place we had in this society, that time, like the last 80 years of history, were an aberration. And we are back experiencing things that our parents and our grandparents escaped to this country from.
Iyan si Linda Ben-Menashe, presidente ng National Council of Jewish Women Australia. Ayon sa kanya, ang October 7, 2023 ay naging malaki ang epekto sa pakiramdam ng mga Jewish Australian na sila ay kabilang sa bansa.
Everyone has to make a stand on and their position on October 7th and on Gaza. It has to be clear, it has to be made obvious. If it isn't, then you're judged for it.
Ayon naman sa manunulat at komedyanteng si Sammy Shah na naglalarawan sa sarili bilang cultural Muslim, nakakaapekto ang digmaan sa pagitan ng Hamas at Israel sa pagkakaisa ng lipunan sa Australia dahil may mga komunidad na kumakampi sa magkakaibang panig ng labanan. Nakita rin ang pagtaas ng Islamophobia at anti-Semitism sa Australia na umabot sa bagong antas noong nakaraang Disyembre.
The two shooters used long-armed weapons to open fire from a bridge onto a park where members of Sydney's Jewish community had gathered to celebrate Hanukkah.
Dalawang armadong lalaki na may kaugnayan sa grupong nagpakilalang Islamic State ang umatake sa mga Jewish na nagdiriwang ng Hanukkah sa Bondi Beach kung saan 15 katao ang namatay. Kinakatawa ng independent MP na si Allegra Spender ng Wentworth ang lugar kung saan nangyari ang pag-atake.
What really frightens me is I hear from many Jewish people who talk about leaving Australia. And they just say, you know, we just don't know that we are welcome here.
Sinabi ng Muslim community leader na si Hannah Asafiri na labis siyang nalungkot at nabigla sa nangyaring pag-atake sa Bondi.
I have nothing to do and certainly nothing in common with a guy who committed those atrocities, and yet the blame that is then acutely felt by individuals and individuals who symbolically also look like Muslims places us in harm's way, and this is sadly a cycle that we've seen time and again since September 11.
Si Kirsty Parker naman ay co-chair ng Reconciliation Australia. Naiintindihan niya ang nararamdaman ni Hannah dahil ayon sa kanya, pamilyar ang mga Indigenous Australians sa pakiramdam na hindi ligtas. Pero may kakaiba ngayon.
I feel that there's a sense of permission having been given to people to be terrible. During the campaign for a First Nations voice, I was a part of the Yes case and was exposed to some absolutely awful commentary on social media and on traditional media, frankly.
Si Hannah Ferguson ay co-founder ng digital company na Cheek Media. Ayon sa kanya, malaking salik din ang social media sa paglala ng pagkakahati-hati sa lipunan.
When you add on the layer of the social media algorithms we're each experiencing, I think that we can acknowledge that things aren't feeling like particularly optimistic. The world that young people are growing up in, the future of Australia that we'll inherit is actually a really scary prospect right now. And that comes from cultural elements, that comes from social media elements, that also comes from just the everyday cost of living that we're enduring right now.
Si Adam Creighton, Chief Economist sa Institute of Public Affairs, ay nagsabing nahaharap ang mga Australiano sa malaking pagbaba ng antas ng pamumuhay at matinding pressure sa pamumuhay.
So no wonder people are angry. We have either the highest immigration rate in the world or the second highest. I think we're up there with Canada. But it's very high, and so that is obviously going to create some social anxiety and also economic anxiety.
Ayon naman kay Race Discrimination Commissioner Giri Sivaraman, madalas na nagiging dahilan ng racism ang hindi pagkakapantay-pantay sa ekonomiya.
If you want to blame someone because you can't buy a house, it's easy to blame a migrant. If you want to blame someone because you're stuck in traffic, you blame a migrant. Economic inequality requires complicated, hard solutions from government. It requires systemic change. It's much easier to blame communities or individuals rather than actually do the hard work of systemic change.
Ang epekto ng mga digmaan at karahasan sa ibang bansa na nararamdaman ng mga komunidad dito sa Australia ang mga pangyayari matapos ang isang terror attack, ang krisis sa cost of living at ang impluensya ng social media, ilan lamang ito sa mga dahilan kung bakit tayo nasa ganitong sitwasyon. Pero maaari pa ba tayong umasa sa pagkakaisa? Palaging may pag-asa.
What I strongly believe is that we need to look at, you know, what's common. Start with that commonality.
Sa susunod na episode sa susunod na linggo, maririnig natin ang mga mungkahi ng ating mga panauhin kung paano haharapin ang polarization at kung paano makakahanap ng bagong landas, pasulong. Mapapanood ang buong episode ng The Social Schism, isang kolaborasyon ng SBS Examines at SBS Insight sa SBS On Demand na may subtitles sa Arabic, Mandarin, Cantonese, Korean at Vietnamese.
Ang ulat na ito ay mula sa SBS Examines mula kay Olivia Diorio na isinalin sa wikang Filipino. Para sa iba pang impormasyon, bisitahin ang www.sbs.com.au/sbsexamines. Martin Tuanyo, SBS, Filipino.
Maraming salamat Martin Tuanyo, at para sa mga karagdagang impormasyon at kabuuan niyan, sbs.com.au/filipino. At syempre, huwag pong kakalimutan, live po kami mula Lunes hanggang Linggo, mula alas 10 hanggang alas 11 ng umaga. Susunod po, magtungo naman tayo sa Masinloc sa Zambales. Sa gitna ng mga balitang napapakinggan natin kaugnay ng ng alitan para sa teritoryo sa South China Sea o sa West Philippine Sea, alamin naman natin o kilalanin naman natin ang kwento ng mga taong naipit sa gitna ng alitang ito. Matapos ang ilang paalala. Maridel Martinez ang iyong kasama ngayong Biyernes ng umaga. Claudia Farhart, SBS correspondent who has been in Manila, particularly in Bajo de Masinloc last month. And we're going to talk about her recent visit. Good day, Claudia.
Hi, Maridel. Thanks for having me.
Oh, thanks for your time. So you went to Bajo de Masinloc in February, if I'm not mistaken?
Yeah, so last month we drove to Masinloc from Manila. Very long drive, very beautiful part of the Philippines as well when you get down there in Zambales. And we didn't go out to the Bajo de Masinloc to the Scarborough Shoal, but we met with the fishermen right on the shores of the South China, West Philippine Sea, who have relied on that area for a really long time, for decades really, for their income, for their fishing income. Spent some time with them and heard that these days really none of them can reach that area anymore. They were still trying until recently, but the confrontations with the Chinese Coast Guard, they said, had become too frequent and too violent. Fishermen were getting hurt. There was a risk of fishermen getting killed. There have been incidents where fishermen from other communities have been killed. So these days, for safety, they just stay very, very close to their own municipal waters.
And so what has life been like for them if they rely on that for their daily bread?
Yeah, it has been a real struggle. So when you stay in municipal waters close to the shoreline, close to the villages in Masinloc, the fish communities in those waters are nowhere near as populous. There's just not as much fish there. There are not as high grade fish there as, you know, out in the Scarborough Shoal or Bajo de Masinloc. I mean, that's one of the most fertile fishing grounds in all of Asia, which is part of why I guess it's become so hotly fought over. So the way it was explained to me is that nowadays the fishermen are making in a month half of what they used to be able to make in a week. So if they used to make, you know, the equivalent of $100 Australian in a week. They're now only making $50 in a month. That's how much their income has dropped. And it's affecting the whole community because there's less fish. The price of fish has also gone up. And in these fishing communities, I mean, it's really interesting if you love food like I do, going to different places in a country because, you know, they're not eating as much sort of chicken and pork in this community. All the sort of meals are centered around fish. And everyone goes to the fish market in the morning to buy the fish, you know, the fresh fish that's just come in as the fishermen have come back from their overnight fishing trip. But the price is going up because there's just less fish available. So whether you're a fisherman's family, or just a regular person in the community, it's affected everyone.
And because of this, an industry is dying, isn't it?
Yeah, they are still able to make ends meet, but only because they have had to be incredibly thrifty, really. So they've had to lower their, you know, expectations for how much money they're going to have in the community, how much they're going to be able to spend. They're really only getting by day. So it's affecting things like, you know, sending kids to school and trying to support families and things like that. There are a lot of people who have had to pause building their homes, for example, because they don't have the income at the moment. So it was interesting speaking to them. They're not overly dramatic about the situation. They're very, you know, we're going to make it work. We have to survive. We have to remain positive. But then the more time you spend with them, the more you see the impact that it's having on this whole community, yeah.
So have you seen Filipino resilience at work?
Yes, very much so. And there was a real sense of, you know, what can we do about it, really? This is the situation. We have to deal with it. And they didn't want to overplay or exaggerate how much they were struggling. It was really only something you could see if you did sort of stay and spend some time with them. Yes, an incredibly resilient community.
Given the limited time and limited space where they can fish, is there anything that they are doing in coordination with the government to find other means of livelihood or to find other ways to continue on fishing?
Well, it's interesting. A lot of them have started to look for other jobs, as you mentioned, other ways of making money. So some of them told us actually when they go out and there's no fish to catch, because sometimes they'll go out for 12 hours and there'll be nothing, they collect bottles and things like that to trade in. So for very small amounts of money. So really people are looking for anything. They are trying to shift to other forms of income where possible, but this is a fishing community. These coastal communities on the shores of the West Philippine, South China Sea, really fishing is the only way they've made, the primary way they've made money for a long time. So what is the government trying to do? The Philippine government has ramped up its own Coast Guard deployments as well into these most hotly contested areas, trying to keep a presence there to, I guess, in a way, protect the fishermen. Having said that, they cannot compete with the numbers that the Chinese Coast Guard and the Chinese People's Liberation Army Navy is sending in ships. So last year, around Bajo de Nasamok, Scarborough Shoal area, the number of Chinese vessels recorded reached an all-time high. And actually, China maintained almost a constant presence in that area for the entire year. I think there was only something like 8 days of the year last year that Chinese ships were not spotted or monitored around the Scarborough Shoal. And so far this year, I mean, the numbers are a little bit delayed, but in January, it actually looks like the numbers of Chinese ships in the Philippines exclusive economic zone had doubled. So the Philippines is trying to, with its partners, with its allies, you know, with the US, with Australia, Japan, Canada, New Zealand now as well, trying to hold joint patrols, joint drills to sort of counter some of this. But it's really difficult to counter the numbers that China is putting out there, particularly now that the US's focus is so firmly on the war in the Middle East and less so on the Asia Pacific.
Can you give us an idea how far the fishing community is from the area where the vessels are, the Chinese vessels?
Yes. So, yeah, Bajo de Nasamok, or the Scarborough Shoal, is still a couple hundred kilometres from Nasamok. But the fishermen told us that the Chinese vessels are actually now coming much, much closer to the coastline. So they're now seeing them about 50 kilometres away. which sounds far, but the Philippines exclusive economic zone spans hundreds and hundreds of kilometres. So when you're talking about 50, it's pretty close. And these are communities that are used to going quite deep into the exclusive economic zone for fishing. You know, they used to go out and be stationed there for days and days on a big fishing trip to somewhere like the Shoal, for example. So they're saying now their concern isn't just about, you know, what's happening around the Shoal, but also what's happening even closer to the coastline. Now that there is this evidence that Chinese ships are being spotted even closer. The Filipino fishermen that I met with, though, are tend to be operating in very small wooden boats, two people.
Bangkas, that we call them.
And these Chinese... Really, it's really interesting to see them. It's like a two-man operation. They kind of just go together, and it's quite small. They're no longer using the bigger boats they used to take all the way to the Shoal because they do worry that bigger boats will be a bigger target. So they're in these small wooden boats, and the Chinese Coast Guard and Chinese Navy has big metal ships, right, with water cannons attached, they're armed, things like that. So that's why the Filipino fishermen said that they really just want to stay as close as possible to the shore, because as soon as they see these big Chinese ships coming, they say they just feel this sense of fear. So many of them in the past have had experiences with being water cannoned or with being shadowed. Some said that sometimes Chinese ships will drive right towards them and only move at the very last second. If you're in a tiny wooden boat and you have this big steel ship coming towards you, imagine that would be pretty terrifying. So they are concerned about all of this coming even closer now.
What's the mood like in the community in particular? Because you mentioned that they were coming closer and closer to the coast. So what's the mood like in the community?
One thing that was sad is that there is a bit of a sense of resignation about the situation. They do feel that it's not a fair fight and that they can't really do anything to fight back. They feel that their government also can't necessarily fight back effectively because of the huge power imbalance, and we're talking about the most dominant military power in Asia, you know, versus the Philippines, which has partners. But its partners also are sort of like Australia, not the biggest military powers either. The US obviously is, but as we've chatted about, has other priorities right now. So there was this feeling in the community, and we asked a lot of people, what can the Philippines do? What do you want the government to do? And a lot of people said, well, they can't do anything. I mean, it's now been 10 years since the arbitral ruling at The Hague found that China's 9-line claim to the Scarborough Shoal had no basis in international law and that China was violating the Philippines' sovereign rights in that area. But in the 10 years since, that ruling hasn't changed anything. You know, China doesn't acknowledge it, and the rest of the world has been sort of powerless to force them to. So I think there is a real feeling in the community now of this is the way it is, this is the way it's going to be, and we just have to adjust to it, even though we know it's not necessarily right or fair or in line with international law.
Was there talk about them leaving the community, finding somewhere else to live?
Interestingly, there wasn't. This was one point people made, that they felt that walking away would be to sort of cede their rights, which is why a lot of them are still trying to fish, even though it's no longer the most lucrative career for them, perhaps, or there would be better ways for them to make money. But they say if they stop trying to fish, that would be sort of akin to saying to China, we give up and you can have these waters. So they don't want to leave the communities. A lot of these families have lived in these communities for a really long time. They haven't, you know, moved there for fishing. They fish because that's where they're from, and that's been the way of life there for generations, really, hundreds of years. So the families I met were definitely not speaking about moving away. They actually were quite the opposite, quite determined to stay, but still a little resigned about the situation.
Most often when we talk about the South China Sea, we see it as a territorial dispute. But it's more than that, isn't it?
Yeah, this is something that we also tried to get at with people. What is this really about? It's to the Philippines and to the Filipino fishermen that I met with. It's about a prime fishing ground. This is, you know, the area they need to access to make their money the way they have for decades.
What can the international community do to help
This is the tough part. What can you actually do about it? Because legally, the international community has done 10 years ago in that arbitral ruling, I suppose, at The Hague, what should be the sort of correct and proper process under international law, and it hasn't changed anything. So in the Philippines, now the focus is really on expanding their defence partnerships with a broader network of partners and allies, not just the United States, because we know that over the past year, since Donald Trump returned to office, that the United States militarily and security-wise has had a really scattered focus. You know, one minute it will be looking at Venezuela, then Greenland. Now it's fighting a war in Iran. The focus hasn't really been on Asia at all. And there's concern in Asia that, you know, the US might not anymore be the most reliable of partners. So the Philippines does seem to be very focused on expanding that partnership. It's always been had a long-term partnership with Australia, but it's developing that partnership further. Just before I was there, they were doing joint drills with Australia in the South China Sea. But it's also made new agreements with Japan, with Canada, with New Zealand more recently. And I think the Philippines sees its best bet at protecting itself now as being having a really broad, reliable network of partnerships. It's interesting that Australia seems to be a country that the Philippines is looking at as a more reliable partner now, not to replace the United States, because nobody militarily has the power or capacity to do what the United States does, and the Philippines is well aware that it has to keep that relationship good, even if it feels that the US isn't quite focused on it and its issues in the South China Sea. But I think Australia is now seen as a very reliable partner there. The Australian government has invested some money in upgrading several air bases on the island of Luzon, for example, over the past few months. Quietly in the background, there are a lot of things happening that seem to be suggesting the partnership between the Philippines and Australia is getting even deeper. So I think in the future, there's going to be perhaps less of a focus on sort of international law, rules-based order way of trying to find a solution to this, because it doesn't seem Beijing is going to engage on that level. And there's going to be a much more practical focus on the Philippines expanding its defensive capabilities with its partners to try and counter China that way.
Finally, Claudia, going into the community in Masinloc, what did you learn about the Filipinos?
These are not greedy people. They didn't want to get back to Bajo de Masinloc or the Scarborough Shoal because they could make, you know, thousands and thousands of dollars in fishing. They wanted to do it because, you know, if they go there for a few days a month, they could make enough money to bring back to the community to support their family for the rest of the month, just to maintain their basic sort of standard of living. It was good to go there to understand their motivation. It was good to hear about their experiences that they have faced at sea encountering these Chinese vessels. And it was, to be honest, they were very frank about how scared and afraid it had made them. I mean, you know, men and grown men don't often love to admit their feelings about this, but a lot of them said to us when we sat down to talk that they were really scared. They thought that they might die. They thought that they might get hit by these Chinese vessels. What did we learn about them? I guess these are villages, communities that are just trying to support their families at the end of the day, but they don't want to do that at the expense of potentially losing their lives. So a lot of them have now had to make the decision of choosing safety over financial security, I guess.
Thank you for your time, Claudia Farhart from SBS News.
Absolutely, Maribel. Thank you so much.
At sa darating na Miyerkules po, papakinggan natin ang ulat ni Claudia Farhart kaugnay ng pagbisita niya at pakipag-usap niya sa mga mangingisda sa Masinloc.
I-like, i-share, mag-comment, sundan ang SBS Filipino sa Facebook.